The Invocation by D. Vincent De Palo. Chapter 6. The Cross. Early the next morning, I cracked my eyes to see Emma weaving through the kitchen with a glass of water. I watched her through the half-open doorway to our bedroom. She was so intent on not stepping on any of the passed-out guests that she didn't notice the priest coming toward her. When she did, she smiled and hugged him sleepily, her honey-coloured hair fanning like strands of gossamer over his black habit. "What now?" I wondered. He traced the sign of the cross on her forehead, then, seemingly on impulse, took the silver crucifix from his neck.
"Do me a favour, my dear," he croaked. "I must be off, but I'd meant to give this to Paul. You'll see he gets it, and wears it, won't you?"
She took it very slowly from his hand. She's still drunk, I realised.
"It's beautiful, Father Jim."
And then she turned and drifted back toward me. My eyes inhaled the sway of her hips, the swish of her robe. Even drunk, there was a grace about her.
"I know you're awake, sweetie,"
she whispered. And then I was lost in her smoky embrace. Chapter 7. From the Journals of Paul Schofield.
Sometimes at one of Emma's soirees, for they really are hers even though they're at my flat, the guests will pick up the instruments I have lying about and just start to pluck and bow and play them, whether they're trained or not. And quite often, the most startling rhythms and textures grow out of this apparent chaos. It's purely cathartic, I know, but how I would like to harness that raw energy, to unleash it on a full orchestra. Brandywine and Nelson had a falling out outside the library, something to do with Emma, I think. It was pathetic. Neither landed a solid blow. They fight like children.
Concentric rings of blackness fills the page.
"Father Jim, what joy to see him still as spry and sharp as ever. He seemed so full of vitality. It was quite a shock then, when he was knocked down and beaten by some girls at the party. Poor man, never have I seen him brought so low. And it was all going so wonderfully, too. My arrangement of the list was profoundly satisfying, though Molino kept coughing and snickering at every full cadence. My God, the man is a fool. He had a cassette of his own music with him, a recording of his wind octet. Utter torture. Thankfully, Emma managed to sabotage the player after the first movement, the most tediously overwrought dissonance I've heard in quite a while. Ah, but then the most extraordinary improvisation ensued. If only I'd recorded it. Such asymmetry, such drive. And that's when the fight broke out. The girl, Uta, she was called, started pounding Brandywine. Apparently, he'd tried to fondle her, a poodle humping a German shepherd. Father Jim went to help, and she knocked him out with a blow from her elbow. Then Epstein thought to join the fray, and the German's friends set upon him like a bunch of wildcats. It was all I could do to pull them off. Poor Brandywine's face is a mess. I found Father Jim at the bottom of the scrum, unconscious and with a golf ball-sized welt on his forehead. And then he was gone before I woke. I never even learned what brought him to London in the first place, but he did leave a silver cross for me. Emma brought it after he'd gone. She was wearing that delightful fawn-coloured nightgown of hers. Ah. Anyway, I put it on straight away. I swear it was still warm from her touch. Odd, I can feel it there now, almost burning. And I can't help wondering, where does Molino find such women?
You have been listening to The Invocation by D. Vincent De Palo. Follow along with the book, available in the Kindle store. See the link in the show notes. and do stay tuned for the next chapter. Movement 2. Istanbul.